My name is Robert Latham. I'm the Associate Director of the Children and Youth Law Clinic at the University of Miami School of Law. We are a live client clinic at the university. Law students work with us to represent young people in foster care.
My name is Rebecca Baer. I am the fundraising chair for Fleur de Lis Shine. Fleur de Lis Shine is a youth-led advocacy group that works together to find issues that are common among foster youth and working together to come up to Tallahassee and advocate for change. I am originally from Palm Beach County, but I currently live here in Tallahassee attending the Florida State University.
So to Robert, I'll say welcome to Tallahassee.
Thank you.
What are you doing during this visit?
I'm here partly as a mentor for Florida Youth Shine, but also to present findings that our program did on placement instability in Florida's foster care system. We hope that the report will shed light on the experiences of individual children in the system and how those experiences can shape the instability that they face. So many children who come into foster care are placed with relatives. That's where they stay until they go home to their parents. Some go to foster homes, and that's where they stay until they go home with their parents. But children with extreme high needs go to therapeutic placements and residential settings that are not always stable for them and often make the therapeutic problems that they were experiencing far worse.
You did a report about 49 kids in Hillsborough County who refused placement in foster care. I didn't know that was an option.
Well, I won't call it an option. Sometimes it's a last resort for many children. So the 49 children who refused foster care since 2017 ranged in age from 7 to 17. Many of them had prior experiences being Baker Acted. Some of them had prior experiences in the juvenile justice system. But many of them didn't have either. Some were refusing placement because they didn't want to go to a foster home with a stranger. They instead wanted to go to an aunt or an uncle or a relative that they felt safe with. Some refused placement because they had been in the group home that was being offered 3, 4, 5 times before and had been kicked out of that home. So many times the children who were refusing were doing so as a form of self-advocacy and just putting their foot down and saying, I can't go back to a place I'm not wanted.
So what happens when they refuse placement?
The system is not well equipped to deal with this. And I think this is a lot of the problems we've experienced. So if a child is offered a placement and refuses, depending on how the system is set up in that area, a case manager may need to stay with that child until a different placement can be found, or the child is forcibly brought to the placement, which is essentially setting it up for failure within the next couple of days. So it can be a very stressful, traumatic experience, both for the case manager and for the child. And we do need to do better about working through that with both the professionals and the children to get through those moments of crisis.
Well, walk me through this. And Rebecca, feel free to weigh in. How does this work? Like, where is the child when the child refuses placement? Are they sitting in an office? Is there a group home setting that they're in? What happens?
So for many of the youth that refuse placement, they are left within the offices of DCF, or they are placed in what they live in cars.
Right. There was one 11-year-old boy who refused placement who had been Baker Acted on Christmas Eve. And Christmas Day, he was given a relative visitation pass to go with a relative. A few weeks later, he was being placed in a group home outside of his county, not even really where he was from. And he refused to go inside because he wanted to be placed with his aunt. And that night, that 11-year-old boy slept in the transportation van until the next morning when the case management came to check on him. And the workers told the case manager that he had slept in the van that night.
It's just hard to imagine. It seems like there's enough difficulty as it is with being shuttled oftentimes multiple times to different foster homes. And then in this case, literally not really having anywhere to go and sleeping in a van. Rebecca, what's your experience with this?
So while I never refused placement, I was placed in a group home. I was actually in 3 different group homes, but my first group home, there was a lot of issues going on within the house, and many of the youth kept being placed back within that home After being kicked out, after running away, they would just bring them back. And many of these youth ran away because there was issues with the staff there. Many of the staff would hit the children or just cause them to lash out. And so when the child hits back or fights back to what they're doing, even verbally, they would call the police, and the police wouldn't believe the child at all. And so they'd either take the child away and put big rack them or place them within the in the juvenile detention center, or just take them out for a couple days and then bring them right back to where they were being hit and hurt. And so they would refuse placement because they'd be scared for their lives, and people would talk within the group home and people would be afraid of those children, even though they had no reason to.
And you said you were in several group homes.
Yes.
Were you in any individual homes?
No. I was never given that option.
Did you age out of the system?
Yes, I did. Aged out back in 2016.
So you're in a really unique position to know what these kids need.
Yes.
Let's talk about this report you did. What did you find about the kids who refused placement?
The main thing we found was that these kids had experienced the worst problems of the foster care system to the highest degree. So these children had been, as a group, on average, in approximately 31 placements. 31 placements is 10 times as many placements as your typical teenager in foster care. So these children had extreme levels of placement instability. They spent 7 times as long in group homes than your typical teenager who is normally placed with relatives. They were moved around the state 15 times as far as other kids. These kids racked up on average over 1,000 miles being moved from placement to placement to placement to placement, sometimes outside of their counties, sometimes back, sometimes being shuttled between multiple counties in the area. And the one factor that stood out for this population of children was that they were ejected from placement, so kicked out after they were already placed there, twice as often as other kids. So these are kids that are being put into a place and willingly going to that place for that night or couple of nights. And then because the placement's not equipped for them or because of problems that arise shortly thereafter, they're kicked out again and again and again.
Was there a recurring theme? Like, were these kids not getting medical attention they needed or the counseling they needed?
So from the data that we're looking at, we're only looking at their actual placement history. So you can't see the services they received. However, I can tell you that a child that's being moved over 1,000 miles around the state, there is no therapist that will follow them along that path. A child that's moved county to county to county can't go to school because there's no time to enroll them. They can't have visitation with their families because there's no way to set up transportation. So just the sheer amount of instability that this population of children experienced would have made all other services nearly impossible.
And I think it wouldn't have occurred to me that kids, for example, in Tallahassee who wind up in foster care could wind up in Miami.
Right.
And why does that happen?
Partly, so the promise of community-based care was that communities would be given the resources that they needed to create the programs in their area to care for their children. Unfortunately, due to funding variations and a lot of other factors, the resources aren't always there. And so a child in one area may not have a therapeutic placement they can go to. And so then the case management agencies are going to need to look in other areas. Unfortunately, some areas have prioritized programs over families, and therefore there's a high concentration of programs in certain parts of the state. So kids are moved out of their communities to where the placements are. Kids with these very, very high needs are moved sometimes clear across the state. I can say that the vast majority of high needs therapeutic group homes, for example, are on the east coast of the state. So if you're in the west coast, even in Hillsborough, if you're on the west coast, kids are going to Palm Beach and St. John's County for those types of placements.
Rebecca, the group homes you were in, can you give me an idea of how many kids were in those homes?
Yes. Yeah, so my first and my third group home both had 12 girls each, and then the second one had 4. But my third one was connected to 2 other group homes as well. So there was a group home that had teen moms and their babies. And then the other side had youth that had just exited the detention centers and was just a holding place for them.
Were you shuttled to other counties?
I was not.
You understand why some kids would refuse placement.
Yes. So from my experience, I've definitely seen a lot of youth come and go into each group home. the people that I entered with, I exited way after them. I myself was abused in my first group home. I wasn't allowed to go to school. I wasn't allowed to walk outside. I wasn't allowed to communicate with anyone on the outside world. So when the youth were feeling that they can't have a voice, they can't talk, a lot of them would just pick up their things and walk out the door, and they would just run away. And so then when the police found them, they just bring them right back and not care what they were trying to say about how they were feeling they were being treated.
And you referred to abuse. Are you referring to at the hands of the staff with other girls in these homes?
It was with the staff. There's definitely been abuse with staff in the group home, as well as there's been a lot of fights between girls within the homes as well.
So you aged out and you wound up at Florida State.
Yes.
Which is no easy feat.
No.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. Back when I was in my last group home, I became a part of a program called Florida Youth Leadership Academy that introduced me to Florida State because I was originally not going to choose FSU. And I met the Unconquered Scholars Program at FSU, which is a program that works with youth that have experienced homelessness, relative care, foster care, or ward of the state status. And when I met that program, I realized, like, this is where my family was and where I wanted to make a family for, like, me. And so when I came to FSU, I built up in that program, and I've been in that program for 4 years now. And now that I'm about to graduate with 2 degrees, I have my own house. I bought a house, and I'm just so lucky to be able to advocate for youth and to be part of such an amazing sorority and programs at FSU as well.
What are your degrees in?
My degrees are Family and Child Science and Sociology with a minor in Business.
And I think people want to know, do you have family? Are you in touch with family?
So my time in the system, I feel that the system helped destroy my family and directly cut it in half. So I do have communication with my dad and my brother. My brother's about to turn 18 and about to go to college. He just got his first college acceptance letter. But I do not have any relationship with my mom or my sisters.
I think that'll be hard for people to hear. And I'm glad that I see you sitting here. You look amazing. You have a great future ahead of you. And are you working? I guess, you know, people will wonder, how could you come to Florida State and how can you buy a house?
Yeah, so the house was an accident, a happy accident. So when I came to Florida State, I do have the PESS program and the tuition waiver for foster youth. That helps cover my schooling, and I spent the first couple years at the Southern Scholarship Foundation, which is a scholarship that provides rent-free housing. So I was able to save money there, as well as I was in an unfortunate car accident where I was hit by 2 cars and pushed into a third. But with that accident, I helped gain a little bit of money that helped me put down a down payment on a house to where I'm starting to learn how to use real estate to help rent out other rooms in my house.
That's genius, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, but I do work. I work at Florida State University. I am a part of the Center for Academic Retention Enhancement Program, so the CARE program that works with first-generation college students, and I'm the intern there, working to help find different ways to bring more youth that need help and services to Florida State.
Excellent. And when's your graduation date?
May 2nd, 2020.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Congratulations. So, Robert, you made these observations with this report. What did you conclude?
Our main conclusion was for the Hillsborough area, a lot of work needs to be done around what they expect of placements before children are placed. So giving good information to placements, having a clear expectation that children are not going to just be placed for a night or for a weekend, that when you take in a child, the child is going to stay there. Permanency is one of the main priorities of the child welfare system, and we can't have a system that accepts children being temporarily placed. So the main finding was really, and I hope it's helpful to the Hillsborough community, that this was rampant in their community. And I think each individual who was part of it thought they were doing a good thing on one night to take a child. What they didn't know was that child had been bounced 30 times before that and was going to be bounced placement to placement even after that. So I'm hoping that the findings are helpful to help the whole community see the path that these children took, and the community can come together and figure out a plan for correcting this.
And so oftentimes the foster parent will be the one who says, we need the child to go back.
That does happen, and I think it's with the best of intentions. So oftentimes placements change in the middle of the day during the workday, but often things happen in the middle of the night, and a person working in the placement department at an agency will have to immediately get on the phone and start calling to see where a home is available. And a foster parent, out of the goodness of their heart, really, because they are kind, will say, I can take somebody for a day, or I can take somebody for a weekend, but I'm not able to take them longer. And sometimes it's for the most genuine of reasons. It could be because they're going out of town. It could be because they just don't have space in their house, or they have another child with high needs and they don't feel they can do more than a weekend. What we found, though, is that those events add up over time to the point that a child, after having that experience 20 times in a row, doesn't trust that the next placement will be permanent, and so is way more likely to say, I can't do this again, please, and would rather sleep in an office with no one except a caseworker that they know than go to another stranger's home.
Yeah. Is there training for people who want to become foster parents?
There is. So the all agencies around the state during the licensing process do provide training. There is specialized training for people that are open to taking children with medical needs, and there is even more specialized training for foster parents who are willing to become licensed as therapeutic foster homes. The group of kids we're talking about typically have very high therapeutic needs. So those foster parents would be trained in how to de-escalate behaviors, how to understand trauma so that they understand that children who have been through significant trauma may communicate differently. They may have a harder time bonding and accepting you. And there are ways to push through that and to build those connections. It just takes time. And we do need more people who are willing to do that. It's a shame that that we don't support our foster families better through that process. If we did, I think we would get much better outcomes.
Are there any bills that you're paying particular attention to regarding foster youth?
Yes. This year we are focusing on the Foster Youth Bill of Rights. The Foster Youth Bill of Rights is basically just taking all the rights that are already in law and just placing them into one document so that it makes it easier for youth to understand what their rights are as well as those in their case plan.
And why do you think that's important, Rebecca?
So that is important because youth, like I lost 90% of my rights when I was in care because I nor those closest related to me knew what my rights were within the system. And so I think it's important because my brother is still under 18, and there are youth that are still within the system that don't know their rights, and they don't know that they have the right to go to school or attend after-school activities or be able to contact the ombudsman. The ombudsman is a person that actually lives here in Tallahassee, and she's amazing, that youth can contact if they feel that their rights are being violated.
And your brother is in foster care?
So luckily, my brother has been able to go home to my dad right after I turned 18.
Good. And Robert, you wanted to say?
I would just say the Bill of Rights lists out clearly that foster children can expect to be safe, and they can expect to have access to family and their communities, and can expect to go to school. We teach children as young as 5, 6, and 7 what good touch and bad touch is, and what they can expect out of life and school. It makes sense to me that foster children receive that same training about this brand new experience that they have about foster care, so that when something like the things we're talking about happens, they can speak up long before their 31st placement and say, there's something I need here that I'm not getting. Please help me.
I just wanted to add that I think it's important for us to recognize that foster youth that do actually refuse homes, sometimes they do it just because they want to be placed with their siblings as well. Because a lot of the time siblings are not allowed to be placed with their siblings. I was never able to be given the opportunity to live with my brother. So we spent all these years separated. I haven't lived with him since. I haven't lived with him since he was 11, and he's about to turn 18.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank both of you very much for your time, for being so open and talking about this.
Thank you.
Thank you.